Thank you, Rabbi Orlovsky. I knew that I would have to go through this again, but I considered it an honor and a zechus and a simcha to be able to be here tonight. It is a little bit frightening that aside from Rabbi Orlovsky, I'm the only living person here on this side of the stage. Actually, my mother-in-law, Olea Shalom, used to tell me that she enjoyed listening to me on tape more than in person. Because on tape, she could turn it off. You don't have that luxury with me tonight. And you're going to have to listen without being able to turn it off. The root of Tisha B'Av, of the crying that we do on Leil Tisha B'Av, is the Bechiya Shel Chinam, the crying we gave thousands of years ago in the desert, when the Meraglim came back and spoke Lashon Hara on Eretz Yisrael. And we learn from there that one who speaks Lashon Hara on Eitzim D'Avonim, on wood and on stone, look at the terrible consequences. Kal v'chomer, most certainly one who speaks Lashon Hara against a feeling human being. So we are enjoined not to speak Lashon Hara even on inanimate objects. Ribbono Shel Olam, it's not enough that you can't speak against human beings. We're prohibited from speaking on inanimate objects, on stone and wood. And the Meraglim should have learned a lesson from Miriam. Miriam spoke Lashon Hara against her brother Moshe Rabbeinu, and she became a Mitzola. She was stricken with Tzaraas. And the Meraglim should have learned a lesson from her. So the source of Tisha B'Av is Miriam. And we have a mitzvah. Zohar eitz asher asa Hashem elokecha v'Miriam v'derech mitzeishchem v'Mitzrayim. We have a mitzvah to constantly remember what Miriam did and how she was punished for speaking Lashon Hara. And that should be a deterrent that we shouldn't speak Lashon Hara. It always bothered me. Isn't it strange that the way that we are deterred from maligning people, from speaking Lashon Hara, is by constantly maligning Miriam and remembering what she did? Isn't that strange? That the Ribbono Shel Olam gave us a mitzvah to constantly speak Lashon Hara about Miriam, so we remember not to speak Lashon Hara. In addition, it's a very, very difficult medrash. The medrash says that in the merit, in the schus, that Miriam waited for her little brother Moshe when he was a baby in the basket in the Nile, and no one knew what was going to happen with him. And Miriam stood by and watched until Basya Basparo found the basket And she went and she arranged that his mother should come and nurse him. In that school that Miriam waited for her little brother, the entire Jewish people waited for Miriam when she became a Metzora after she spoke Lashon Hara against Moshe Rabbeinu. What happened? The cloud was ready to move on, and Klal Yisrael were going to break camp and move. And all of a sudden it stopped. And everybody asked, what's going on? Why aren't we traveling? And the word went through the camp, because Miriam is a Metzora, and she's outside the camp. And we're going to wait for her 7 days until she's able to come back into the camp and is healed. I don't know, but that doesn't sound like a great merit to me. The only ones who knew about what happened to Miriam were Miriam, her brother Aaron, her brother Moshe, and the Rabbanu Shel Olam. It was a very private family affair. No one knew. Wouldn't it have been better for Miriam if the Rabbanu Shel Olam sent her out of the camp for 7 days? Let Klal Yisrael not know a word about it. Let them travel. And 7 days later, the Rabbanu Shel Olam would provide Miriam with a fast horse or donkey and let her catch up with the Jewish people, sneak into the camp at night, and no one would ever know what happened. But no, Miriam had a tremendous chus. And because she waited for her little brother, the entire Jewish people knew that she spoke Lashon Hara and that she was a Metzora outside the camp and waited her for 7 days. That's a schus. What does it mean? The Gemara tells us that there are two kaparas that existed in the Beis HaMikdash for Lashon Hara. The me'il, the garment that the Kohen Gadol wore, that had on its hem bells and pomegranates and made noise, atones for Lashon Hara. When the Kohen Gadol wore that garment, it affected an atonement for those people who spoke Lashon Hara and did tshuva, and this added to the atonement. And the Gemara says there was another atonement for Lashon Hara, the Ketores, the incense, also performed and achieved and effected a kapara for Lashon Hara. And the Gemara asks the obvious question, why was it necessary to have two different atonements, two different objects that atoned for Lashon Hara? Why wasn't one enough? And the Gemara answers that the Ketores atoned for Lashon Hara Shebechashoy, usually translated quiet Lashon Hara. And the Me'il, which made noise, was Mechaper on Lashon Hara Shebekol, noisy, open, public Lashon Hara. That's the way it's usually explained. There's only one big problem. Where do we know that the Ketores affected atonement for Lashon Hara? From the following incident. After Korach's entourage is swallowed up by the earth, and the 250 Leviim and Bechorim are burnt with a fire that comes from the heavens, the Jewish people come and they say the following, Atem hamitem esam Hashem. They say to Moshe and Aaron, you caused the death of these people. They didn't say they caused the death, said it quietly, secretly, but they said it openly in the second Loshen Nochach, second person, you caused. That means they said it openly to Moshe and Aaron. That obviously was public, open Lashon Hara. Wasn't said privately and secretly. So how can we learn that the Ketores atones for private, secret Lashon Hara, when the Lashon Hara that the Ketores atoned for, Aaron HaKohen brought the Ketores after a plague, began to decimate the people, and he brought the Ketores and it stopped the plague. So we see that Ketores atones for Lashon Hara, but the Lashon Hara that was spoken was public, open. How can we learn from there that Ketores atones for private, secret, quiet Lashon Hara? Therefore, I think that the meaning of the Gemara is something different completely. There are two sins that are contained in Lashon Hara. Two damages that Lashon Hara causes and that need to be atoned for, that need to be corrected. The first is Bein Odom L'Chaveiro, the obvious, the Lashon Hara Shebekol, the Lashon Hara that's caused by the sound of a person's voice, the effect that it has on someone else. You speak Lashon Hara and malign someone, you damage their character, you hurt their parnasa. That is Lashon Hara Shebekol. And that needs to be atoned for. That's a sin between man and man. You're a mazik. You've caused somebody damage. You've damaged somebody. No less and perhaps more than damaging him physically. So that is the me'il. The me'il represents the noise of Lashon Hara. The open, public effect of Lashon Hara. How it affects the other person. And for that you have the me'il to effect an atonement. But there's a silent part of Lashon Hara that also destroys, but doesn't destroy the person who's spoken about. It destroys the person who's doing the speaking. It destroys his neshama. It's like they say about high blood pressure. It's a silent killer. When the person speaks Lashon Hara, the effect it has on him is quiet, private. You don't see it. It's a silent killer, but it's a killer. And it needs atonement. It needs something to correct it and to make that negative effect, to negate it and take it away. What is that effect? How does speaking Lashon Hara affect the person who does the speaking? The Gemara says in Sanhedrin, Adam la'amal yulad. Man was created to toil. We were put in this world to work. Not to take it easy. To be productive. To bring and realize the potential that we have. And the Gemara continues and says, Ve'eni yodeya. So a person was put in this world to toil. Toil in what? Ve'eni yodeya. Im la'amal malacha, o la'amal sicha. Was he put in this world to toil physically or to toil verbally, spiritually with his mouth? And the Gemara brings a pasuk to prove that the main toil of a person is with his mouth, not with his hands, not physical labor. And then the Gemara says, Va'adayin eneni yodeya. Okay, a person was created mainly to toil with his mouth. Eneni yodeya im la'amal sicha, im la'amal Torah. Okay, a person was put in this world to toil with his mouth. What does that mean? To talk or to learn Torah. And it brings another pasuk, V'hagisa b'yomam v'layla. Should meditate on Torah day and night. Now I know that a person was created to toil in Torah. Says the Chafetz Chaim, what was the Havan? I need a pasuk to tell me that a person was not put in this world and created merely to work physical labor. Without a pasuk, I might think that's what he was put in this world for. Now I have a pasuk that a person was put to labor with his mouth, verbally. I need another pasuk to tell me he wasn't created just to talk. He's created to learn Torah. Why would I ever think that a person was created just to talk? I mean, there are people who think that and fulfill it all the time. But I need a Gemara to tell me that people were not created just for sicha, for conversation. That the verbal toil is Torah. Says the Chafetz Chaim, God created an imperfect world on purpose because he wants us to perfect it. And that's what toil is. Toil is taking potential and bringing it out and actualizing it and realizing it. And God wanted us to perfect the world he created and perfect ourselves along with it. The Medrash says that Turnus Rufus HaRosha once asked Rabbi Akiva, what's better, what man makes or what God makes? And he was sure that Rabbi Akiva would respond, of course, what God makes is better than what man makes. And Rabbi Akiva surprised him. And Rabbi Akiva said, it's clear that what man makes is much better than what God makes. And Turnus Rufus, bewildered, said to him, what are you talking about? He said, very simple. You're going home to eat lunch. God made wheat. Your wife made bread and cake. Which is better, the wheat or the bread and the cake? I'll take the bread and cake any day. So obviously what man makes is better than what God makes. The meaning is, the Rabbanu Shem created an imperfect, unfinished world. And he expects us to perfect it and finish it, and in doing so, to perfect ourselves along with it. Asher bara Elohim la'asos. Some understand that sentence to mean the Rabbanu Shem created a potential world, unfinished. La'asos, that man should finish it. That man should be a partner in perfecting the creation that God created. God gave us the raw materials. And we are also raw materials. We're also Adama. Adam in Adama. And just as much as we're supposed to perfect the raw materials of the physical world through our own physical labor, we also are to perfect ourselves. So there is an idea that perfecting the world physically is a very, very positive thing. But that's not the major purpose of a person's toil in this world. Yes, it is important. It is important to physically perfect this world. But that's not the main thing. The main thing is that a person has the ability of speech. That which makes a human being special more than any other creation is that he is chai hamedaber. He can speak, and speech is what makes us human. And therefore the main perfection of the world is that where the person uses his mouth, his neshama. Speech is a very, very high thing. Speech takes the most spiritual, inner thoughts, the neshama of a person, and it mixes it together with the physical world, with airwaves, and it creates dibur. That's why lashon, language, is called lashon. It comes from the root losh. Losh is one of the 39 malachas of Shabbos, where you take a solid and a liquid and you mix them together and you make a compound. That is Lashon. You take the deepest spiritual feelings from within your neshama and you mix them into the physical world with airwaves, and they become sound waves, and they become dibur, a dover. They become an entity, they become something. And that is exactly how God created the world. Hu Omar Vayehi. He spoke and he created entities. He created things. And that's what a human being can do. He can take his neshama and he can mix it and bring it out into this physical world and create dibur, an entity, a thing. And that's called sicha. Sicha has many meanings to it. Sicha can mean davening. A person can use his speech to converse with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to speak to God, and in that way to create a relationship. And through davening, we build and perfect the world. We correct the things that need to be corrected. We affect Yeshuas with davening. That's sicha. Sicha can also mean to speak praises of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Sichu b'chol niflosav. V'niflosecha asicha. To speak and praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And praise those things in the world that are substantive, that what the world was created for, but represent the purpose of the world. And I can speak and promote them and praise them and strengthen them. That's also sicha. So I build and create and perfect with my speech. And sicha also means conversation between people, communication. People strengthen each other. And they're able to communicate with each other. The perfection of the world is not an individual thing. It's a team effort. It's a collective effort. And only by people communicating with each other can they really perfect the world. Look at Migdal Bavel. When they couldn't speak and communicate, then they couldn't build. Then they couldn't create. They couldn't perfect. So that is sicha. Sicha is a tremendous power. It's the power of prayer. It's the power of communication. It's the power of praise and promoting verbally those things that are substantive in this world. So there is a havamina. I might think that that's why a human being was created. To perfect the world with his speech that makes him human. And the Gemara says, yeah, that is a very, very important part of the perfection of the world and the purpose of humankind. But there's something greater than even that. And that's Torah. Speaking words of Torah, that is the ultimate perfection of the world. That perfects the world, this world, the next world, eternally. Talmud Torah keneged kulam. We list a whole list of Gemilus Chasadim every morning. And Talmud Torah is equal to all of them. Says Rav Aaron Kotler, what does Talmud Torah have to do with Chesed? Achnosis Kal, Achnosis Orchim, Avayas Ameis. All those things are Bein Adam L'Chavero, between man and man. What does it have to do with Talmud Torah? Says Rav Aaron Kotler, all of those Chasadim, all of those kindnesses, are very limited. They're very specific. Bringing in a bride, bringing in guests, all of them are specific to a specific situation. But if there wouldn't be a world, there couldn't be any chesed. The greatest chesed is seeing to it that the world exists, and the world is promoted. And without Torah, there is no world. In lo brisi yomam v'layla chuko shamayim v'aretz lo samti. If it wouldn't be for the constant learning of Torah, the world would have no substance. The world couldn't exist. And every word of Torah gives the world more substance. So that's the greatest chesed. Somebody who learns Torah is keeping the whole world going, whereas every other chesed is very limited and specific. So therefore, the ultimate use of a person's speech is limud haTorah. But the truth is that all the other things are also important. It's important to physically perfect this world and bring the world to fruition through toil. Physical perfection of the world is also important. And the verbal perfection of the world through davening and through communication and through speech and through promoting verbally all those things in the world that are substantial is also important. But the ultimate is Talmud Torah. And therefore you can understand why, if a person uses his speech for the antithesis of all of that, instead of to perfect the world, instead of promoting that which is good in the world, a person uses his speech to denigrate, to destroy, to malign, then he basically loses his humanity. The world was created that human beings should use their speech to promote, to build, to create, to perfect. And Lashon Hara is the antithesis of all of that. So a person basically, instead of edifying his neshama, instead of bringing out his neshama, and that is what life is all about, he basically kills himself. He basically negates his neshama. And therefore he becomes a metzora. A metzora is a living dead man, a zombie. Your skin turns white just like a cadaver. You look like a dead man. And you become tamei as if you're dead. And you have to stay away from human beings. You are totally separated, detached from society. And a person has to be like a mourner. He's mourning for himself. Because for all practical purposes, he may be talking and walking and seeing and hearing. But he's totally destroyed his neshama. Because neshama was meant to be used in a way that comes out in this world for perfection, for strengthening those things in the world that are positive. And here a person is using it for the antithesis. And therefore you can understand when Chazal say that there are many things that perfect the world, but Talmud Torah keneged kulam, using your voice, your language, your speech, for the most noble, high purpose of Torah, of building the world, is greater than everything else. Yerushalmi says the opposite, the flip side of that. There are things that a person loses his share in the world to come. He's punished there and he's punished here. Just like there are things that a person is rewarded for in this world and in the next world, because he combines the two. There are things that the punishment is in this world and the next world. Gili arayis, immorality, shvichas damim, murder, vavodah zarah, and idolatry. And the Maral explains that gili arayis is a sin of the flesh. It destroys your body. And shvichas damim is a sin of the emotion. Anger. You kill somebody out of anger. Jealousy. Whatever it may be. It's a sin of the nefesh. Of the emotional side of a person. And avodah zarah is a sin of the intellect. Of the neshama of the person. And each of those things destroys one aspect of a human being. And that's why you have to give your life for them. Because what difference does it make if you physically die or you're destroying yourself spiritually anyway? Better that a person should die physically than he should destroy himself spiritually. So avodah zarah, gili arayis, shvichas damim, destroy each one aspect of a person. But lashon hara keneged kulam, the Yerushalmi says. Lashon hara is equal to all of them, just like Talmud Torah is equal on the other side of the spectrum. Because it's the ultimate perfection of the world. Lashon Hara is the ultimate destruction of the world. Because that which is supposed to perfect the world is our neshamas. Bringing our neshama out into the world through speech. And when you speak Lashon Hara, and you destroy, and you malign, then that is the antithesis of what the world is all about, the antithesis of what a human being is, and Lashon Hara keneged kulam. So that is the Lashon Hara shebechashai. That's the silent Lashon Hara. The loud, noisy Lashon Hara, we know when you speak and what you say, you harm somebody else. But what it does to your neshama, how it affects you within, that it basically kills you as a human being, that's silent. That's not so noticeable. That's the silent Lashon Hara. And therefore, for the noisy Lashon Hara, the me'il is the atonement. The Kohen Gadol wore the me'il that when he went into the Heichal to make the Ketores, everybody would know that they shouldn't be around because it was forbidden for anyone to be there when he made the Ketores. So he warned people, get away, you shouldn't be harmed. We learn from that when a person comes home, should knock on his door. They shouldn't make it uncomfortable for people who may be doing something private and you just walk in on them. Even your own home. Knock on the door first. Don't even cause somebody damage by making them feel uncomfortable. So the me'il, which prevented people from being damaged even by discomfort, atones for that noisy, open Lashon Hara, the damage to other people. The Ketores, on the other hand, what is Ketores? Ketores is incense. You take a physical thing and you burn it and you transform it into something spiritual. That is what speech is. Speech is taking your neshama, mixing it with physical things and turning that physical sound waves into the highest spiritual perfection that can be. That's what speech should be. So the Ketores, which takes the physical and changes it into spiritual, atones for a person who takes his neshama and mixes it with the physical world in a negative way, in a harmful way, and therefore loses his humanity, totally negates his entire spirituality, negates his neshama. Those are the two kaparas. Now let's go back to Miri. Tell you a story. True story. When I was a rabbi in Miami, many years ago, someone came to me with the following shaila. He had reconstructed what had happened, and he wanted to know what he should do. What had happened? So his wife had been cleaning the kitchen. All of this was, he discovered after the fact. His wife was cleaning the kitchen with bleach. In those days, this must have been 30, 35 years ago, bleach came in glass bottles. Looking around the audience, probably many of you don't know what a glass bottle is. But there used to be things called glass bottles. Ask somebody who looks like they may know that what exactly that was. And the bleach bottle fell over and neatly broke through the top. It had jagged edges on the top, but most of the bleach was intact. So this housewife was very frugal. She didn't want to throw away the bleach. On the other hand, you couldn't use this container anymore. So she poured the bleach into a Coke bottle, empty Coke bottle, and she left it on the floor. One of her children came home, and they see the Coke bottle on the floor, and they want to be a fine boy, girl, I don't know if it was a son or a daughter, and do their mother a favor. She obviously left the Coke bottle on the floor by mistake. So they took the Coke bottle and they put it in the refrigerator. The husband came home from a tennis match. Remember, this is Miami. And he was extremely thirsty. And he opened the refrigerator just enough to feel around for the first Coke bottle. And he took that Coke bottle, put it to his lips. Baruch Hashem, when the bleach hit his lips, he realized this was not regular Coke, new Coke, old Coke. It wasn't even Tempo. It was something else. And he didn't drink it. So he wanted to know if he has to bench Gomel or not. That was his shaila. Now let's see what would have happened had he drunk that bleach. I would imagine nothing would have happened because nobody here had any malicious intention. It was a complete accident. The housewife just wanted to save some money. The child wanted to help his mother. The husband just wanted to take a drink. Nobody intended here to murder anybody or to commit suicide. Totally innocent. An accident. A mistake. So what would we say if somebody drinks bleach that was left there with no malicious intent, totally by accident, and he drank it by mistake, it wouldn't hurt him? Wrong. Had that man drank that bleach mistakenly, nobody had any malicious intent, he would have burned his kishkes out. 100% for sure. Here is Miriam Hanaviyah. No malicious intent. She hears that there's problems between her little brother Moshe and his wife. Because when Eldad and Medad became prophets, Tzipporah, Moshe's wife, said, I feel good for them that they're prophets, but I feel bad for their wives because they're probably now going to have to separate. And Miriam said, what are you talking about? She said, well, since Moshe Rabbeinu, such a big prophet, he separated from me. Miriam said, what are you talking about? I'm a prophet. I didn't have to separate from my spouse. My brother Aaron is a prophet. He didn't separate from his wife. There must be something wrong in Moshe Rabbeinu's house. So Miriam went to discuss it with her brother Aaron. We've got to do something for the shalom bayis of our little brother Moshe. Her intention was pure, was good. She made a mistake. She didn't realize that Moshe Rabbeinu's level of prophecy was different than their level. So she maligned his level of prophecy accidentally, by a mistake. Total mistake. No malicious intent. Only good intention. Did she do any damage to Moshe? The Ha'ish Moshe Onav Na'ol. Moshe couldn't care less what she said. It rolled off his back like water on a duck's back. She caused no damage to him, no malicious intent, only good, but it was a mistake. She should have gone to Moshe directly and spoken to him, not spoken to Aaron. So she fell into Lashon Hara by accident. Comes along the Torah and says, if you drink bleach by accident, with no malicious intent, look what it does. It destroys your neshama, at least temporarily. She's a metzora. So we don't learn from Miriam that Miriam did something terrible. It's not Lashon Hara about Miriam. But we learn from Miriam that even if you have no evil intent, even if it's a total mistake, but if you fall into the trap of Lashon Hara, you destroy your neshama. You become a mitzvah, you become a living dead person. And that's a tremendous chus for Miriam, that all generations can learn from her how devastating Lashon Hara is, even though we know that Miriam didn't mean it, she meant nothing malicious, she fell into it by mistake. But even by mistake, Lashon Hara destroys the person who speaks it. How do we know that Miriam had no malicious intent? Because if she had malicious intent, or even if there's a inkling that she could have had malicious intent, then we're not allowed to say that about Miriam, because then we're speaking Lashon Hara about Miriam. Then we're saying Miriam did something wrong. We're not learning from Miriam the effect of Lashon Hara, but then we're speaking negative about Miriam. Miriam did something wrong. She spoke Lashon Hara maliciously. So it had to be 100% clear to Klal Yisrael that Miriam could not have possibly meant anything malicious. How do I know for sure not? If you look in the Rambam, it seems he says this idea. Because Miriam put her life in danger when her little brother was a baby and she was 6 years old. Because waiting for that little Jewish baby, if you're caught, you could be executed for countermanding Paro's decree. But she put her life in danger for her little baby brother to see that he would be taken care of. How could we possibly imagine that same Miriam, who risked her life for her baby brother, should now speak maliciously about him? Impossible. And therefore, in the schus that Miriam waited for her little brother, the entire Jewish people were able to wait for Miriam and know what she did, and it wouldn't be Lashon Hara about her. But we'd learn from Miriam how serious the effect of Lashon Hara is on the person who speaks, even though we're not maligning Miriam, because we know that she did it without any malicious intent. We know she did it totally by accident. That's what we learn from Miriam. And therefore, it's not only a problem to speak Lashon Hara about human beings, about people that you damage. That's not the only effect that Lashon Hara has, how it affects the person I speak about. But it's how it affects me. And my speech was given to me to edify those things in this world that are substantive, that are positive, to strengthen what the Rabban Shem wants in the world, to perfect it, not to denigrate it, not to destroy. And therefore I can't speak Lashon Hara about Eitzim V'Avonim, about inanimate objects. Which inanimate objects? The inanimate objects that the Rabban Shem uses to perfect and promote the things in this world that he wants. And one of those is Eretz Yisrael. One of those is Eretz Yisrael. She's not allowed to speak Lashon Hara about Eretz Yisrael. Not even about the trees and the stones. I'll tell you even more than that, what you can't do. The Gemara says in Ksubis that Rav Ami and Rav Asi lived in Eretz Yisrael, and they used to give their shiurim outside. There was no big enough place for them to give their shiurim. There were so many students. So they gave their shiurim outside. Now in the winter, when it became very cold in the shade, they would stop the shiur, bitul Torah, and move the students into the sun. Rashi says they shouldn't complain that it's too cold in Eretz Yisrael. So they moved into the sun, warmed them up a little bit. In the summer, the opposite. When they were learning in the sun and it became too hot, they'd stop the shiur and move them into the shade. In order they shouldn't complain that it's too hot in Eretz Yisrael. The Rimigash says that it wasn't just that they shouldn't complain. Rav Ami and Rav Asi didn't think that their students would complain about the weather. But they wanted to encourage them to speak nicely about Eretz Yisrael. Ah, it's so nice in the shade in the summer. It's so nice in the sun in the winter. So it was worth stopping the shiur and stopping learning Torah for a few minutes to speak nicely about the weather in Eretz Yisrael. Says the Ben Yehoyada, the Ben Ishchai, we should learn from here a lesson that a person should not speak anything negative about Eretz Yisrael. Not about the weather, not about anything, even, he says, even about the Arab architecture in Eretz Yisrael. Don't speak badly about the way the Arab houses are built. Ad kedekah. Does that mean you can't speak about the politicians? You can't speak about anything in Eretz Yisrael? Everything is beautiful here. It's never too hot, it's never too cold. Everything is just hunky-dory in Eretz Yisrael. So what does that mean? What does it mean? Let me tell you what I think it means. Eretz Yisrael is the place that the Ribbono Shel Olam designed when he created the world to be a place of perfection, especially for the Jewish people. This is the place where all the mitzvahs apply. This is the only place that we can build the Beis HaMikdash. This is the place that fits us like a glove. Omad Bayimode Doritz, the Gemara says. God measured every land, and he found no land more suitable to the Jewish people than Eretz Yisrael. And he found no land more suitable, nor no people more suitable to the land than Klal Yisrael. Meaning the following. We are a holy people with special relationship to God. And Eretz Yisrael is a holy land with a special relationship with God. And this is the place where we can create that relationship. This is the place where we can sanctify every aspect of life. And that's what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to be a mamleches kohanim. We're supposed to be God's representatives to the world. The goy kadosh. And we're supposed to be a holy nation. That means that every aspect of life, our social life, our economic life, our political life, our married life, everything is supposed to be done in a way that's holy. And this is what we can accomplish in Eretz Yisrael, and only in Eretz Yisrael. We can have very fine kehilas and chutz la'aretz and live a very fine Torah life. But the ultimate perfection of Torah is only here, because all the mitzvahs only apply here. Many mitzvahs don't apply in chutz la'aretz. And it's only here that we can create a total Torah environment, a totally holy life. That's Eretz Yisrael. And in that respect, maligning Eretz Yisrael and giving the impression that Eretz Yisrael is missing something, it's not perfect, then you're speaking Lashon Hara about the Rabbanu Shalom, because the Rabbanu Shalom said it is. And therefore Eretz Yisrael is called Eretz Asher Lo Sechzar Kol Bo. There is nothing missing here. Now, I don't know, maybe that applies today. But I came to Eretz Yisrael 26, 27 years ago. And I came to Eretz Yisrael 26, 27 years ago. And Eretz Yisrael was missing a lot of things. Of the staples of life. Like Skippy peanut butter. Star-Kissed tuna. Hellman's mayonnaise. People used to being lifts of them. Because how could you survive without them? How could the Torah say Eretz Yisrael is Eretz Asher Lo Sechzar Kol Bo? Medrash says, I'll try to complete with this. The Medrash says, Rav Shimon Bar Yochai had a kolel. And one of his kolel members went to Chutz Laretz, and he became rich. And he came back and he visited the kolel with a thick wallet and a nice fancy car and a bank account. And the other members of the kolel said, you know what, maybe we should go to Chutz Laretz for a few years and become rich and come back. So Rav Shimon Bar Yochai said, close the Gemaras, we're going on a tiyul. Took him into a valley, and he said, valley, valley, fill up with gold coins. And the whole valley filled up with gold coins. And he said, you want money? You don't have to go to Chutz Laretz for money. There's plenty of it here. Take what you need. And they went and started to run to take. And Rav Shimon Bar Yochai said, wait, I forgot to tell you something. Take a pen and pencil with you, pen and paper, and keep a record of everything you take. Because in the future, they're going to take this off your Olam Haba, and you want to be able to check and make sure they don't take off too much. So they decided to go back to the Beis Medrash. Eretz Yisrael is missing nothing. Maybe if it seems to be missing something, you don't need it. Or maybe it's not that Eretz Yisrael can't provide it, it's that you don't deserve it. That's Eretz Asher Lo Sechzar Kol Bo. So to malign Eretz Yisrael means to say that Eretz Yisrael intrinsically is not a perfect place. Oh yeah, it can be very imperfect. There can be people who abuse this land and misuse it. And that, according to the laws of Lashon Hara, you can speak about it. You can speak about the abusers if there's a toeles, if you don't exaggerate. All those are halachas of Lashon Hara. But to make it, to imply that is something wrong with Eretz Yisrael itself, that demeans the whole purpose of creation, that's using your speech to belittle and weaken what the rebellious one wants in the world. And that's not what the speech was made for. And therefore, women, says 10 measures of sicha descended into the world. Women took 9 of them. It's usually considered very negative about women. Women are talking all the time. 9 measures of sicha, of conversation, of talk. But we said sicha means the most high things, tefillah. It means strengthening other people. It means speaking goodly about the things that the Rebbeinu Shem wants to improve and to perfect this world. Women have 9 tenths. They don't have the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. Men have that mitzvah. But women have the 9 tenths of sicha, the other purpose of using your speech, for tefillah, for encouraging through communication and through speech the good things in this world. It's because of that tremendous power of sicha that women have, the schus of women, we were redeemed from Mitzrayim. And the schus of women who use their sicha in the proper way, we will not have to sit on the floor of this Tisha B'Av and cry, but we'll be able to celebrate when Tisha B'Av becomes Soson the Simcha, the Yomim Tovim, the Tevav Yomim. I now have the pleasure of introducing to you the video of Ephraim Eliyahu Shapiro. He is a very, very close friend of mine. He's a Rav in Miami, in Shari Tfila. He's the son of who I consider my mentor in Rabbonis. When I went to Miami, I was very young and very inexperienced. And Rabbi Mordechai Shapiro, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, was the rabbi of Beth Israel congregation. I went to him for guidance. I considered him my Rebbe in Rabbonis. His son, Ephraim, was a little boy at the time, and we watched him grow. And he has become one of the rising stars in Klal Yisrael. You'll hear for yourself on the video. Very, very choshuva, young Rav. And I'm sure that the message he will leave us with will be inspiring, uplifting, and Emir Tz Hashem, something we can take home and that will be everlasting.